Welcome, everybody, to the Badgerland Birding Podcast, bringing you birding news and stories from the Badger State and beyond. Today, we're with local birder Tim Hahn, who's been birding in Wisconsin for quite a while. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Doing well.
Is this the
So,
launch of your podcast career?
well, I've listened to many podcasts, but yes, first time visiting a podcast.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about how you got started in birding and what it's kind of like birding in Wisconsin.
I started about, gosh, 20 plus years ago now while I was in school. My dad was always interested in nature. He was a middle school teacher, so we always had like animals and stuff in his classroom. We'd go fishing and whatnot when we go camping. And then I don't know, nothing really came of that, but when I was in college, I had this second shift job where I didn't really do anything in the morning. And one of my coworkers was like, "Well, I'm gonna go and get my bird seed for the year and some oranges to put out for the Orioles." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And so he's telling me all about what he does, and yeah, so I kind of started to look into that, and then found out there are these stores called Wild Birds Unlimited in the area. So I started visiting those, and by the end of the summer, I applied for a job there and got the job. Met some interesting people there, some who you might know: Eric Brunke, Tom Presby, Paula Stick, Ann Moretti. And from that point forward, it was pretty much all downhill, you know, how things go in birding.
Were all those people working at the Wild Birds Unlimited?
Yeah, all at the same time. Yeah, pretty
Wow, that's
crazy.
wild. That's
I
like
know.
when you talk about the NFL and there's like a bunch of pro MVP athletes that went to the same college at the same time or something, or when the
Right.
Oklahoma City Thunder had Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and also James Harden.
So I mean, it was pretty interesting being there. I mean, even starting out, you know, I was really mostly into the backyard birding, but then I think it was Paula who said, you know, she went birding with Tom and got, you know, whatever the number of species it was. And I was like, "What the heck? That's a lot of birds." And I didn't really even know, you know, half the ducks or anything at that point. Yeah, I started getting into it more and more, and then continued working there for a few more years, and you know, joined the WSO, went on their field trips, joined the local bird club, the Benjamin F. Goss Bird Club, so on and so forth, as most birders kind of experience. And yeah, been involved with all sorts of other various groups and things since then. So
Do you remember the first bird that really piqued your interest, like a spark bird?
yeah, I mean, it was probably the bald eagle. Just I remember going up north camping with the family, and is in that Eagle River Saint Germain area, and I'd go fishing with my dad, and I didn't really care about the fishing, but the bald eagles were pretty cool. So
A
that's
very
what I always say is
American
my spark
choice.
bird. You know, and it's they're not nearly as majestic as they seem. You know, once you get to know them, they're pretty much a scavenger. You know, they steal things, and they're not really as majestic as you think. But I still like them. They're pretty cool.
You're like absolutely disgusting creatures, but I love them.
They're not very bright either. They get hit a lot when they, you know, fly off of a roadside from scavenging things. So, you know, they could be a lot better off if they didn't do that.
It is funny because you just today we were seeing a journal article that was like, bald eagles are definitely in Waukesha. Like, but why are they here and how to find them? Like, the general community is totally captivated by bald eagles. So I think for birders, you know,
Well,
we see them a lot. So we
yeah.
kind of are, oh, it's another bald eagle. But to the everyday person, that's like the peak.
Yeah, did you see the bald eagle?
Oh,
Yeah,
every time.
yeah,
Yeah,
every
we always
time.
joke
Yeah,
about that
it's
with whenever there's a non-birder, whether it's a friend that you say you're interested in birds or a random passerby, they always have a bald eagle in their yard or one that they saw the
yep.
other day that they need to tell you about.
Yeah, and it's I was just at Pewaukee Lake the other day, so it was nice that there were bald eagles sitting there, so I didn't have to get that question from people. That one was out, you know, off the table.
You could tell them that.
Yeah, they were like, "What's that brown blob out there?" I'm like, "Oh, that's a bald eagle." So, but it was cool. I got to share it with them in the scope and whatnot. And then it was two immatures, and then an adult came in, and it was pretty cool.
You talking about the people or
Still,
the
my
eagles?
favorite bird.
Are you talking about the people or the eagles? Two immatures, one
Oh,
adult. I
I think we
the
should categorize
eagles, the
people like
eagles.
that. Like, yeah, I
Yeah.
saw two immatures the other day and an adult.
Yeah, it's just imagine if we talked about people the way we talk about birds. That'd be pretty interesting.
Oh
And
yeah,
it's eclipse
absolutely.
plumage.
Oh
Yeah.
yeah, the plumage choices are something for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you get like phalaropes where it's like sexually dimorphic. You get the females look like, the flashy ones, and
Yeah, there's
so
some comparison here with roseate spoonbills where they go bald as they get older. Some commonalities there.
hey.
Yeah, clearly you're not a first year.
No,
Not
clearly
a
I'm
juvenile
immature.
anymore. There is something about seeing a bald eagle in a wild habitat. Like we go camping in Minnesota, and it
Yeah.
feels way more special to see them there compared to if you see them in the landfill or something.
Right, yeah. And then that's what I grew up watching them. You'd see a nest up in the tree, and then they'd come down and grab a fish or something. It's just, being like 10, 12, whatever, it's really captivating. So that's really what drew me into, I guess, birds, even though I didn't realize at the time that 10 years later I'd be starting an obsession, which, has spiraled into, insane amount of time spent in the field. Looking back, that was the start of it.
Is that a moment you cherish, or is that a moment that you wish you could erase? Are you like, this whole birding journey has just taken my life in a bad direction?
Well, if I didn't spend my money on birding, I'd spend it on something else. So I guess I'll call it a cherished memory.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, there's a lot worse things you could spend money on. Probably better things you could spend your money on, but definitely worse things you could spend money on. But you kind of are known now to a degree as the county guy. You like getting your county list up and you're doing a county big year this year. So how has that been going?
It'd be better if I was retired, but it's going pretty good. Yeah, I didn't really start out looking at that as what I wanted to do, but every year kind of something comes to me that I want to focus on, whether it's like traveling to certain place, or for the Atlas, for that 5-year period, it was finding all the breeding birds you can, that sort of thing. Lately, I have been focusing on my county lists, and not just my home county. I've been doing like, see how many counties you can get 125 species in, which is kind of a threshold for the reporting to the WSO for their year-end totals. Just a fun little thing to do. So I've been trying to do that the last few years in various counties, but this year I decided I'm going to travel as little as possible. And so I'm going to do my home county of Waukesha. And so I started planning that, shortly after the new year, I guess. Didn't get a really great start because we started the first weekend of the year in Saxon Bog, which is not anywhere near home base. But anyhow, after that, yeah, so I've been trying to pick off as many of the winter birds as I can. So I made a list of, what birds should I get before winter is over, which happened way sooner this year than I thought it was going to. But yeah, so I made a list of like, winter finches that I want to get before, spring arrives, so that I don't have to get them next winter, after Thanksgiving kind of thing. Other winterish birds like short-eared owls are only around in the winter in Waukesha. The one that I'm still haven't gotten yet is saw-whet owl, which I'm thinking I may have to wait until next year to get. Just depends on if any of them are still around. But with this warm winter that we've had, I feel like most of them have probably headed back north. So yeah, I mean that's kind of how I'm approaching it. I'm not really worried about getting the migrants. Just kind of trying to focus on the tough to get birds, because when you're doing something like that, if you focus on tough to get birds and you're out there enough, you're essentially going to get all the rest of the birds anyhow. And if you do it soon enough in the year, you might end up with some things that you have to focus on later. Like you, I mean, just for example, like barred owl. A few years ago, I didn't get barred owl until well into the summer, so I had to focus on that. But it was one out of, however many. So it really like lowers the mileage that you have to drive to go find birds.
Definitely. For people that don't know, WSO is the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology. If you hear
Oh,
the
right.
acronym, that's what it is. And then, have you done a county big year or big year type thing in the past?
Regrettably, I did a state big year a while back. And I say regrettably, kind of tongue in cheek. I don't think I'll ever do a state big year anytime soon. Because it was kind of an obligation after a while, and you do put a lot of miles on your car. I've done a pseudo county big year where, like, you notice halfway through you got, most of the stuff checked off, and you say, "Oh, we'll try it." But this year I'm starting out early just to see how well I can do. There's a couple folks in the county that are definitely ahead of me, but they are retired, so
I don't think you can
I'm
use
not
that as an
gonna
excuse,
I'm not
Tim.
gonna
I
say I'm
think you
competing
just gotta
against
grind.
them. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
I want to
It's
hear more
fun.
about the state big year. What'd you end up
Oh.
with?
Yeah, did you get any crazy stuff and have any like wild memories from that one?
It wasn't too impressive of a number total. I think it was ended up being in the 280s.
That's solid.
But it's not too bad. I mean, you can easily get 300 nowadays, especially with the way people use eBird. But at the time, I wasn't really using eBird. And I can, if I look at any of my numbers, it's pretty clear when I started. It was probably the end of July. And I mean, I had a pretty good year all up until then. It was like the end of July, and I was at Wind Lake Sod Farm, just south of the quarter, into Racine County, which is like, it's the place to see buff-breasted sandpiper. So I was out there looking, and I had a couple. And so I reported it to the local listserv, and my buddy Tom Presby, the guy that I worked at the bird store with, he said he sent me a message. He's like, "That might be the first buff-breasted sandpiper in the state. You got to eBird that, and then you can get credit for having the first one in the state." And I'm like, "Okay," didn't think it was that big of a deal, but I did. And sure enough, it was the first one in the state. And I'm like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." And so from that point forward, I mean, I think I posted it on Facebook, and every year that comes up in July, and I put a comment on there one of the years, how the memories show up, and I'm like, it's not often you can really point to an exact moment in time where an addiction started. But that was when my eBird addiction started. And then from then on, it was like I said, filling in gaps, things like birds that you hadn't seen, previously in the year. And so, like, rough grouse, I had a hard time finding any rough grouse. I don't think I got rough grouse that year, but I do remember I was at my buddy's family's house in Sturgeon Bay, and I was like, "There's probably not that many rough grouse in Door County, but I'm gonna try and find one." And so I put out like a request for information, and some lady said, "Well, have a pretty reliable spot for rough grouse." And I was out there, like, on the end of this road, probably borderline trespassing. It was technically a winery, but I'm not sure I was in the right part of the winery that I was supposed to be in on the land, looking for for rough grouse. And I don't think I found it there that time, but I thought to myself, like, what am I doing? Like, this is so crazy that I'm searching, I'm driving 45 minutes to an hour away from my buddy's house, looking for a rough grouse because I didn't get one earlier in the year. And I mean, that it was fun and also kind of crazy at the same time. And well, there's some fun moments in there, but like I said, I don't think I'm gonna do it anytime soon because of how much effort it takes. And I think if I had, all the time in the world, I would do it again. If I retire, win the lottery, whatever, I'll probably do it again. But I'm not quite there yet.
I think we all eagerly await your return to doing a state big year, Tim. I've got a
Well,
question
maybe
for
we'll
you.
start a GoFundMe. I don't know.
Oh, I like the way that you're thinking there. Maybe we can all do the big year together. It can be like a little mini, the big year movie just in the state. But do you feel like the landscape of birding in Wisconsin has changed over the past, like, however long since you've been birding? Because I know in the past 10 years, there's been a lot of turnover, it feels like, in the people that go really hard. You know, when I started, there was consistently, you know, this group of people that would report things all the time, be traveling all over the place. And that feels like it's kind of turned over. And I don't know if it feels kind of more disjointed now, the state, than it used to me. It used to feel like everyone knew what was going on all the time. Now it feels like there's little pockets of people that are kind of together. I wanted to get your input on that.
To a certain extent, yeah, I think you're right. I think probably social media has something to do with it. We all did connect in different ways. You know, certain what would you call it? Like listservs or groups or whatever come and go. You know, like the Whispered is still exists to this day. It's the email listserv. You know, some people still use that, but that used to be the way you got your information. Now, people who are looking for rare bird reports, they're not using Whispered because it's just not doesn't see the volume. So they're using eBird or maybe a Facebook group or the Discord. You know, Discord's a new thing within the last year. So I think that's part of it. You know, certain people use certain things, so you see the kind of the disjointedness that way. So like maybe the folks that aren't comfortable with Discord, they're still using Facebook. And people who aren't comfortable with that or Discord are using you know, the emails. And they may I've heard from some people where they're like, nobody sends any emails out anymore. It's like, well, it's just kind of like a really inefficient way of sending information. So people have found different ways. And I think that tends to do it. I'm in a text group with some Milwaukee birders because I work in Milwaukee. And so there's what, 16 of us, and we share information back and forth. So there's, you know, you can almost get really granular to like that text group is really insular and maybe information doesn't even get outside of that. So I think it's more about how we share our information than anything that like you run in different circles and that kind of changes things a lot.
Yeah, do you feel like there's been a change in the species composition? Like species when you got into birding were more common and are now harder to see, or species that were harder to see when you started that are now easier to find?
Gosh, that's, I mean, I know there are some species that are easier to find, like pelicans are all over the place now. We had our first reports in the county yesterday or today.
He's on top of
And
that county
they,
report list. Yeah, listen to him.
yeah, I got my needs set up. I got a shortcut for my needs set up on my phone that I can check whenever I need to. You know, I guess, yeah, there's definitely, a lot less of those northern species, the boreal bog birds, blackback woodpecker, boreal chickadee, spruce grouse, gray jay, Connecticut warbler. We have, you know, that's documented for sure. There's only one known nesting spot of Connecticut warbler in the state anymore. Not that there isn't a few others, maybe, but there's not a lot. And then you see like the southern influx, you get more, mockingbirds, summer tanagers, chats, yellow-breasted chats. You get more influx of that the further south you go. So, you know, we're in the southern kind of tier of the state. We've always had a few yellow-breasted chats, yellow-throated warblers, things like that showing up, but now it's like pretty regular. I wouldn't doubt it if they're breeding in that southern tier of counties quite a bit.
Carolina wren too, I'd say. I feel like we get a lot more Carolina wrens than we used to.
Oh yeah, that used to be a bird of note, one that you'd chase kind of at certain spots where you know they're going to show up in the winter, and now it's like, eh, I'll find one eventually. So
They're fun though. I do like that we get more of the southern birds, but obviously there's that trade-off too, because I think evening grosbeak was one as well. And maybe even pine grosbeak. I don't know if they're technically boreal birds, I guess, but they usually show up at bird feeders and things. But it feels like those
Yeah,
have
they're
gotten
not
harder
really
to find.
breeders in the state. Pine grosbeaks aren't breeders in the state, but evening grosbeaks had been for a long time. And even the hot spots, you know, up north in Forest County that they have been regulars at, they just aren't anymore.
Yeah.
So unless you go to Ryan Brady's house.
That is true. For those of you that don't know, Ryan Brady, he's a very notable birder, and I think he works for the DNR, right, Derek?
Yeah, he's a DNR
He's
biologist.
He has a
avian
ridiculous
biologist, yeah.
yard. Got a ton of crazy boreal type birds just in his yard, even
Yeah.
grosbeaks, all sorts of red poles,
Yeah, I think he got
grosbeaks.
like an accidental boreal owl out while he was like mowing the lawn or something like that, you know.
He's
Trustworthy,
always
right?
getting wild stuff out there.
He's had Jaegers fly
Yeah, but
over.
he's had to take like donations of bird seed in winter in past just because of the number of evening grosbeaks he's had raiding his feeders.
Oh yeah, I believe that for sure.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen in many places anymore. Not in
No,
Wisconsin.
I've seen the range map predictions too for things like evening grosbeak, and they're kind of, it looks like, going to get extirpated at some point if the trends continue. And I don't know what could be
Probably.
done to solve that problem, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, if we all stop driving our cars, maybe it's a pretty tough road to hoe, yeah.
Well, a lot of
I don't
it's
know if it's bad with that either.
connected to spruce budworm, isn't it? Isn't that a pretty big part of their diet?
Yep. And we have a pretty good example of that. If you look at like some of the winter finch reports that come out, they reference how like in 2020 they didn't do a lot of the spraying for the spruce budworm, you know, because of whether it was COVID funding, you know, programs and such. And this is in the boreal forest, mostly in Canada. And it turns out like the spruce budworm itself as a species did pretty well then because it wasn't getting sprayed. And so, you know, all these birds like Cape May warblers, you know, evening grosbeaks that nest in those areas just went crazy and just had really good reproductive years. So that's a really good point,
Let's just
you
keep
know.
not spraying those. I mean, I'm down for that.
Yeah,
Well, Tim's
well, you
absolutely
tell the forestry people that they might not agree, but I'm in your boat, yep.
Yeah.
I was surprised because I did warbler research today, actually, for some projects that we have going on. And I was shocked at how many warbler species it said their primary nesting food source is spruce budworm specifically. It was so many
Yeah,
different species.
probably mostly the birds that don't really nest in Wisconsin or
Yep.
barely do, like Cape May is super far north,
I
but
think
like
black
birds like,
pole.
yeah, black pole, bay-breasted, Tennessee, Wilson's, none of those birds really nest in Wisconsin. So yeah, they're probably really reliant on that.
Tim, here's a question for you. So migration obviously comes in waves. You kind of have that first migration that hits. You get the killdeer, the grackle, the geese, all that stuff. Eventually, you get the ducks going. Then, warblers, stuff like that. What's your favorite part of the migratory process? With which wave of birds
Ducks.
do you like? Ducks?
Ducks and geese.
I'm glad you didn't say warblers. I feel like warblers were the low-hanging fruit. What is it about
Yeah,
the
I'm not
geese and
really a
ducks?
sparkly kind of person, you know. I
You
like
got
when
a
they're
warbler on
grounded.
your shirt, Tim. There's a hooded warbler right
Well,
there.
yeah, but
Tim, you dirty
that's a resident.
liar.
This is because this is the Waukesha, the from the convention that we hosted here in Waukesha. And the shirt is very comfortable, so I wear it a lot. But no, I mean,
Comfortably hypocritical.
hey, I didn't say I didn't like them. I said my favorite is the ducks and geese. I think that first, you know, greater white-fronted goose of the season is just like one of those like dopamine hits every year. That you know just never gets old. Makes you want to go out and get windburnt looking at all the little, you know, mud ponds and whatever melting spots you can find.
Oh, absolutely.
And then like the pintails, the widgeons, the ringneck ducks. I mean, not only are they easy to look at because they just sit there, they're not jumping from tree to tree. I mean, unless an eagle comes along, they're just gonna be floating around. But they're pretty, and you know, it's definitely a good, like I said, a good dopamine hit after a cold winter. Which, you know, this year is not too bad, but in years past, like what are we, March 5th? Usually things are still pretty frozen right now. So,
Yeah. What
yeah.
I always thought was cool about geese is that when I was not a birder, I never knew that there were more species around here than Canada geese. So the first
Yeah.
time I learned that greater white-fronted geese existed, I was just mind blown. And
Yeah.
when I found out we actually got snow and Ross's geese here too, I was even more mind blown. Cackling is just, it looks so similar. I don't think I cared that much when I found that out. But the other ones, it was like, whoa, I can look at a flock of geese and see something other than Canada.
Yeah. It's like one of those you know when you're a birder when you're looking through like a flock of geese or a flock of blackbirds or flock of shorebirds to find like the weird one or gulls. Gosh, gulls is the
Oh
worst
yeah.
for most people, but
I love that stuff.
you know, if you're not really looking for a cackling goose, if you're just like, oh, they're all geese, you're not going to pay attention. But if you know there's that one chance that a cackling goose or you know a snow goose or a greater white fronted is in that flock, you're going to be looking at every flock of geese just like you would any flock of warblers. So I don't know what it is, but like yeah, early March, mid March, get your mud boots on and start, you know, going out in the melt, which we don't have this year, which is kind of disappointing. I always like that, but
We could still
yeah,
get it.
I we'll get it. We'll get it.
Might
I
be
think
in
the birds will
April,
be
but
through by then, but yeah. Tundra swans is in that same group of birds that come through at the same time. Yeah, that's my favorite.
I always get excited when the grackles and the red-winged blackbirds come through at first too, just because you know that it's starting. You know, it's kind of
Yeah,
like when the
yeah.
calendar turns to December and you know Christmas is on the horizon. It's kind of
Yep.
similar to that, where you're
Yep.
thinking, okay, the blackbirds are back, the killdeer is back, it's on the horizon, the whole process is about to kick off.
Yeah, that's that Aldo Leopold thing, that sign of phenology, you know, that red-winged blackbird to me is, yeah, that first sign of spring. It's usually in late February we get our first red-winged blackbirds in a typical year, and say the 20th-ish, 25th of February. Yeah, that's usually a really good sign of spring.
Tim, I was gonna say, do you have a favorite warbler?
I don't know. Gosh,
Hate
there's
them all.
35 or so that come into the state. I can't. I'm trying to think of them all. I
I'll
don't
throw some
know.
out there
Like,
that might be fan favorites.
I
Cerulean,
like
Blackthroat Blue, Blackburnian. Hooded.
the hooded warbler. That's the one that. So this is a painting by Lynn Barber.
Oh,
She's
nice.
the yeah, and yeah, she painted this because we chose the hooded warbler as our kind of logo bird for that convention, because Waukesha County is kind of like a hotbed for hooded warblers, which is more of a southern species, but in the southern Kettle Moraine, which is kind of like what I consider the most underbirded area in southeastern Wisconsin, it's a hotbed for hooded warbler population. And so, I mean, you can go anywhere in southeastern Wisconsin probably and find them in migration, but they breed really heavily in that southern Kettle Moraine forest. And I don't know. I never have a bad time searching for a hooded warbler.
It's always nice before the bugs kick up. You can get in there, you know, and find some stuff. It's always pleasant.
One
Have
thing,
you
one good tip on hooded warblers is they're always singing higher up than you think. You know, they nest like 2 feet from the ground, but those males, when they're singing, like when they're really, really singing on territory, they're probably 25, 30 feet up in the trees. So
Yeah, they
there's your
can be
tip.
very deceptive. Really, a lot of different
Yeah.
warbler species can be very deceptive. I was going to ask, have you done any owling lately? I know you said you were kind of hoping for saw whet. Have you been out recently?
Not as much as I hoped. This kind of life things got in the way. Yeah, I do have plans on going for saw whet and then some of the breeding birds, which I haven't gotten yet. But short-eared owls, I hit pretty hard at Paradise Valley, pretty not too far from here. Finally got one on the third try.
Nice.
I know I talked to Derek that one day that we met just randomly out in Vernon. And I had gone to Paradise Valley twice before that because I told you know, I had the short list of birds I want to get before winter's over, and that was kind of my grail bird for the winter. it's always kind of like my grail bird for the winter around here. And there was not really a lot of port reports, but yeah, the third time I told Derek, like, I'm going to Paradise Valley later today and hoping for the short-eared owl. And it did show up for like, a split second and then went down. Must have found some prey or something. Did what a short-eared owl does and just disappears on you in a second. And then like some people were like, oh man, guess we're not getting it tonight. And me and another guy who I think his name is Bill or Bob, never even met him before. He stayed, was trying to get pictures. Eventually it was too dark for pictures, but we still managed to see just by sticking out there a little bit longer, we got to see the short-eared owl do its cool flight. And
Oh,
a lot of
yeah.
it's like, like quick turns and very un-owl, not owl-like flight. That's so cool.
Yeah, for anybody that has never seen this video before, I made a video about searching for
That's
short-eared
right.
owls. And Tim is in the video, and we had a really good time watching them because I think we had at least six, and they were are
Yeah, that was
so
a
fun because
crazy
of how
day.
acrobatic they are. Yeah, it was a really
And
great
we
day.
didn't have to stay very long either.
No, it was
No.
they kind of immediately came out, it felt. And that was just a really cool experience. Anytime you get to see a short-eared owl, because they're so different than any other owl,
Yep.
just with how acrobatic they are. And you said something that's very true. You said that I think their up flap is quicker than their down flap, was it? Or was it the
Yeah.
reverse? So they look
No,
moth-like in
it's like
flight.
moth-like. It's like
Yeah, and it does look like that. They just look so funky when they're flying. I was gonna say this too,
Yeah.
because we also went owling, me and you, that one time in the South Cal Moraine. I think the South Cal
Yeah.
Moraine would be the creepiest place I've ever been to at night.
Yeah, I mean it has a feeling to it. I'll agree with you there. Yep.
Yeah, and I remember we were in the woods and I was little creeped out because it's pitch black, there's trees everywhere, and I remember you're like, I don't hear anything, we should probably go in another 100 yards. And I was like, all right, you're sure about that, let's do it.
You guys definitely
Was
got
that like
squatched, didn't
Scuppernong
you?
or something like that?
I think we were at the Mackey Woods and we were just wandering
Oh
around. We got
yeah.
to the other picnic area at night and we didn't hear anything, but I was just like constantly hearing twigs break in the distance, like looking over my shoulder, because I think there are people that have reported Sasquatches and weird stuff in there too, so
I wouldn't doubt it.
I
I
wouldn't
wouldn't
doubt
doubt
it
it.
either. There was
Tim, are you a believer?
A Sasquatch?
Yeah.
I have never put myself in a position to believe to see one, so I'm not gonna, knock on people who say they have. So we'll leave it at that.
There was one experience I had in there where it was a busy day, actually. So I don't think there's anything weird, but I was walking the trail in that horse trail, in there.
Yeah.
And there was some noise. Something was breaking sticks kind of probably 50 yards into the woods, following along where I was going. No idea what it was, not saying it was anything creepy, but it gave me the creeps a little bit. And
Oh,
yeah.
I've been there. Yeah. Yeah, I've been in that same spot that you and I were. I think it was an early morning, one of those days where you're out trying to like hear whippoorwills in the morning or something, and I heard this huge just like boom, like clonk in the woods. I'm like, there's nothing out here that I would expect to make that sound. And it wasn't like a tree falling or anything that big. And I was like, what the heck is that? I'd seen reports of like mountain lions coming through, that sort of thing recently. And I'm like, oh no. Oh no. And your mind starts going on that. And I was like, well, I'm not gonna leave because like the chances aren't very good that it is a mountain lion. And then if I leave, I'm just gonna regret it. And then eventually I finally realized that I think it was like a baby great horned owl falling out of a nest because I saw one on the ground.
Was it
So,
okay?
yeah. It seemed to be, those things fall out of nests all the time. So
Like, they're
I wasn't gonna
hardy,
pick it
but
up. Have you seen
right,
those
yeah.
things' talons?
I
They can
was
break your
hoping
arms
that
with
you were
those.
going to say that you brought it home and raised it as your own, and you were going to pan over to it just sitting somewhere on a perch in wherever you are in your house.
It carries my
Yeah,
mail.
get myself in trouble.
Yeah, it's
Yeah, you
definitely
just incriminate
illegal.
yourself.
Don't do that.
Yeah,
But
non-permitted owl.
Yeah, me and Ryan have definitely both independently had the experience of feeling like we've been watched or like something's watching you in this KM State Forest. It's one of the creepier forests because sometimes you're out in the woods and you feel like everything's normal, but in there it just has that vibe. I don't know what it is.
I don't either. I've been there hundreds of times, and I have had that feeling multiple times in the northern Kettle Moraine too. I mean, there's the kind of the southern unit and the northern unit. The northern unit almost has this other creepy vibe of like, my friend Paula says it's like a mystical place with like wizards and warlocks and things like that. And
People
there
play
are a
D&D in
couple
there.
of those little artsy areas, like in Montrose and whatnot, where they have like these little artists kind of, gatherings, and they have like statues and stuff, and it's all like very wizards, dragons, things like that. And so like I still get those vibes up in the North Kettle Moraine too. And all this the road names too, like you can make give that vibe with road names.
Sasquatch Avenue.
Maybe we should push for that. Just try and get one to be renamed Sasquatch Road.
I think we should all name them after cryptozoological creatures, actually. You can have like Dogman Court.
Mothman.
Oh, I like it. Yep. You're privy to
Jackalope.
the cryptid. Yep. There we
Chupacabra.
go. Yeah, that'd be so funny. People just be seeing these signs like, what is going on here? I don't remember this place being this weird
Well,
before.
then the people that live on those roads, they're like, yeah, it's 1820 Chupacabra Lane. One thing I wanted to
Oh
ask
man.
about, Tim, is a lot of times when people do big years, and me and Ryan have kind of had this experience ourselves just when we're kind of going out looking for stuff, is they'll hit like a burnout point where they're just kind of like, I don't feel like going to see this bird, but I need it for the year, so I'm gonna go anyways, and then it takes some of the fun away. Are you worried
That's
about that
almost
with the county
inevitable.
big year? You gonna just push through?
No, I mean, I know it's gonna happen. And that's kind of why I said I wouldn't do a state big year for a long time again. Keeping it local will help with that. But yeah, it's inevitable. It's going to happen, and you might miss a couple birds just because, you need a chill out moment. But yeah, I did have several of those during the big year, and then, after the year was over, because that was 2011, 2012, I just kind of did nothing for like 2 months. I did not go birding at all. I didn't like write it off or anything, but it just didn't thrill me for a while. And it's one of those reasons that I say I won't do one, because it did feel like an obligation for a bit. And I almost get a little bit of like, PTSD from that. Not that it was absolutely traumatic or anything, but like, you see like the big year, or you hear about people doing big years, and you read about them getting word of a rare bird, and they have to go to Alaska to go get it. And I just get like physically like annoyed by having that obligation. But birding's supposed to be fun, so I figure if you don't want to do something like that, don't do it. And we'll see how long this one lasts. Maybe I will get really burned out, but hopefully keeping it local keeps that from happening too much.
Yeah, so I did some eBird research, and in Waukesha County, you're number two on the all-time leaderboard with
Whoa.
263 species. Your last new county life bird was a blue grosbeak on July 3rd, 2022.
I did know that, believe it or
Of
not.
course you
Hey,
did.
who's
You're the
number
county
one?
guy. Patrick Horn is number one with
Oh, Pat.
281 species.
Yeah, and you know what? He just moved to Dane County, so I got
Oh.
my opening here. So,
There you
but
go.
he's
Wait,
like
how many
20
is he
ahead of me.
behind?
So, what?
How many behind is Tim, Derek?
So Tim has 263, Pat Horn has 281.
Tim,
So
what are some you
18?
know you need?
I
Are
got
there
some
any you
warmth.
know you need?
Oh yeah, like some pretty simple ones,
Oh,
like
clear up.
Avocet. Shows up on like Michigan all the time, but isn't a good inland bird. But it's bound to be in Vernon Marsh one of these days. Snowy egret. Let's see. European goldfinch is a kind of newer one. That's definitely seen in the southern part of the county. Definitely more findable in Milwaukee County, but if you go over to where the dumps, you know, you have the Muskego dump and the Franklin dump, it's the county line goes right in between them, but apparently there's European goldfinches there.
Huh.
Stuff like that.
Tim, we got to check that out together. We got to go take a trip to that dump and find out for real.
Yeah, and you know what? I still need lesser and great blackback gull for the year, so I do want to go down there, you know, pretty quick here before those birds start to make their way out. But I did learn Saturdays and Sundays are not good days to be there because I don't think they're working in the dump and it doesn't kick up all the gulls and what. So,
this is the insider information we need.
Yeah. I mean, you got to plan your initiative, your year, if you're going to do it right. I also picked that up at Superior on Sunday when they do the Jägerfest at Superior. That a lot of the reason the gulls are moving around is because of the dump that's nearby there. And on Sunday, the dump is closed, so the gulls aren't as active. So,
did you also pick a leap year to do your county big year so you'd have an extra day?
You know, I had to work that day, so I didn't go birding.
Dang.
I did not think about that.
So I know Arjen Dwarsha is the guy who has the global big year record. He chose to do it on a leap year so he'd have an extra day.
Ah. Yeah, I haven't read his book yet, but I do have plans of picking it up. But
it's good.
I read Noah's book, and that was really fun. That's crazy how far in advance you would have to like pin that.
Yeah, well, Arjen, he didn't have a single flight get canceled. Like, he had some crazy luck to have like his
crazy
schedule work out as well as he did.
Yeah,
I don't
heard
know
him
if that's
talk
ever
about
gonna
it
happen
here and
again.
there. Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, like there's got to be some weather delay somewhere that's going to kick you off your path at some point. And it just, you know, it just didn't happen for him. So there's a big day record in Wisconsin that's essentially unbeatable because of like, you know, the things that just the rare birds that showed up for the guys that ran that. It was unbelievable luck that they had. So it's just sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
It's unbeatable until it's beatable, though, Tim. You can do it.
That's true.
You could go drill down even farther and do the county big day record.
Oh, man. I don't even know where that information would be, but
it may not exist. Maybe no one cared enough.
I think the ABA holds on to that information somewhere. I did a couple big days with the guy, I think it was like 2012, 13, and he and his dad were big day veterans, and they would do scouting and they would look at, you know, this is a beatable record. And so what he did was he looked at the Wisconsin June big day record, and he pegged that one as one that we could beat. And so we did that on like June 2nd. And then, I think the next year we just did a regular May big day, and you know, I don't know if they have county tracked, but I have done one big day, two big days in Waukesha County. A couple of years ago, I did it with a couple friends, and we got 120, which I didn't think was that great, but it's still a lot of birds.
It is. I'm assuming it was in May sometime when the warblers were popping.
Yeah, it was the 15th, so it's smack dab in the middle of May. Yeah.
Pretty funny because you could end up getting a day that was just bad or a day that's really good. You know, it kind of depends on just what the migration is doing.
Luck is so
really
much
know
to do with it. Yeah, right.
So as far as that Wisconsin big day, it says Team Curlew and Screech, Al Shea and Randy Hoffman set the big day record in 2002 in Wisconsin when they observed 230 species.
Yeah, wild. Crazy, huh?
That's
in
some
one
people's
day.
Years.
Yeah, exactly.
Years. I think they read the whole record of that, if I remember correctly. And I think there's a whole record of it on some website where you can read where they went and what they did.
Oh, yeah, like a recounting of it?
Yeah, and I remember one thing that really struck me as interesting was a lot of the birds they listed as saying a regular place to find them, and it was stuff that's almost never here now. So it was regular place where you would get tricolored heron, regular place you'd get little blue heron, regular place you get king rail, and that stuff that's super rare here now. So I think that some of it too was there was just different stuff that used to live here than comes up here now.
King Rail I could see for sure. That's a bird that has come and gone, I think. It's pretty rare to find one now. I've only seen one in Wisconsin. But like snowy egret used to be a regular breeder on the Green Bay. You probably heard of Cat Island, and that colony kind of got wiped out for, I think there's several causes. But it's not wiped out like killed. It's just it petered out. But yeah, I mean it's interesting how like, we used to have greater prairie chickens historically in Waukesha County. We have records of it out at Paradise Valley, which was a, kind of a wet prairie kind of thing. And once they farmed it, it took them all out. It was not good habitat. And so as habitat changes, your birds really rely on habitat a lot. And so what Al and was it Al and Randy? Randy
Yeah, I
Hoffman and
believe
Al Shea?
so.
I don't think I've ever met Al. I've met Randy before. Yeah, I mean, they knew where to go. They knew where those rare birds were, or the unusual ones. And then they hit, I'm pretty sure what I've read their list, they hit some really unusual birds too. So.
Yeah, it seemed like everything just kind of aligned that day. And you got to, have the knowledge of where to find it and what to know what you're looking
Exactly.
for too.
And with big days, your time is crunched so much that you have to like keep moving. I've run big days where like you dawdle a little bit and you realize you are leaving too late and you miss something, in the next spot, or you get to a spot too late in the day. Believe it or not, on the big day, I spoke so much of hooded warblers. We did not get hooded warbler that day a couple years ago because we just didn't hit the Kettle Moraine early enough. We got there at like, I don't know what it was, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which is not good time for birding. So,
Yeah, me and Ryan do the first of the year birding challenge every year, and some
yeah,
of
I
those
remember
trips
seeing that.
we'll be having a really good pace, and then like we go to Milwaukee and get hit by a snowstorm, and it's just one thing
You
that
never know.
we're on fire, we're gonna break our record, and then bam, snowstorm, and it just kind of ruins the rest of your day.
Well, for your Waukesha County year that you're doing, so much of it, I think, is going to depend too on if any shorebird habitat gets created. Because there's been some years where there's no shorebird habitat, nothing's going to stop in. If it is a good year for some shorebird habitat at one of the marshes, then you have a much better chance. Because I remember Vernon Marsh is a place that we go to a lot in Waukesha County, and it has two different sections. And one year, a section of it was really good for shorebird habitat. It had low water and a lot of mud flats, and there were some pretty cool shorebirds that arrive there, but then other years there's almost none.
Yeah, that's definitely it. They used to publish, the DNR used to have a guy that would publish a list of what he called managed mud, and it was spots that they actually managed in fall migration for shorebirds. I haven't seen that published lately, but there was usually one of the pools within Vernon was on that list. And so hopefully, it works out again this year. I know they were doing some habitat management there this winter. And I know I heard from a couple guys that like, the water levels were changing quite a bit based on how they were managing it at the time. I think it was either for, structural changes where they were fixing a water flow control, or, trying to create more cattail or less cattail habitat, that sort of thing. Because it's mainly managed as a wildlife area, so they want to have it, be for duck hunting and refuge and things like that too. But there usually is one. I know the close pool and the figure eight dikes is usually a really good spot for shorebirds. I think that's where
Interesting.
I usually get my still sandpipers.
The figure eight dikes we have a love-hate relationship with, because if you go there in summer or any warm time of the year, the bugs are incessant. And if you
Well,
go
and
there
those
at any other time of the year,
thistles.
it's super windy.
Yeah, do not go there in shorts. The thistles are so bad.
It's not managed as well as it used to be. I think they used to mow some trails in there, and it seems
Well,
like
it's
they just
also
kind of let
very
go.
there's not a lot of money into those things anymore, so it's really like there's a lot of holes and lumps, so getting like a mower out there is probably pretty difficult.
Maybe you should give her a go. You know, bring a tractor out there or just bring a little push mower, see what you can do.
Do it for the
Well,
county.
I don't own anything like that. I'm an apartment person, so I don't have a lawnmower or anything like that.
An
So,
apartment dweller.
I see all the costs that my friends have with their houses and all the stuff they have to do on the weekends. And I'm like, no, thanks. I'm gonna go birding.
You know, I feel like that's the thing about Waukesha County is Waukee Madison, they have spots where like, yeah, it's a great spot to bird. And Waukesha, you're like, yeah, it's all right, but the thistles will get you and the bugs and it's windy. Like we have to settle for these spots
Yeah,
where
it was
there's
great
these.
5 years ago, but the farmer, drain tiled the whole thing now, and there's no birds there anymore. That kind of
Know
thing.
exactly what place
Yeah.
you're talking about too. You're talking about the place near the soccer fields in Oconomowoc, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yep,
Yep.
there it
Oconomowoc
is.
Fields.
Just by the description, I know what was going on.
There might have been some shenanigans too with like the water control barrier at like downstream there. I heard a rumor that one of the guys went down there and just destroyed that. And, whether it was legal or not, I have no idea.
Wait, destroyed it for what purpose? To get it backed up or to get it
No,
drained?
the opposite, so that it would drain and so that he could farm his fields.
Oh, okay. I
Sketchy.
get what
But
you're
that was just
saying.
a rumor though, so
We don't want to
and
get
I don't
anyone
even know who these
arrested.
guys are. I just you hear things, so
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that
so I've.
was a
Oh, go ahead, Tim.
I was gonna say that I've had that was a really great spot though. We had breeding when we were doing the Atlas. Was that 5 years ago now? Wow. We had breeding coots, yellow-headed blackbirds, and then on the other side of the road that was flooded, we'd have ruddy turnstones, Brewer's blackbirds, and in tons and tons of other shorebirds.
Wow.
There is still a little bit of time during the spring where it'll flood, but the window's not as big.
Dang. It makes you wonder what you could do if you bought a section of land and just managed it for birds, you know?
You have no idea how much I think about what I would do with money if I won the lottery,
We, as Badgerland Birding, we can run it as like a property we own. So if anyone wants to
Oh.
gift us a nice property to manage, we can,
There
we'd
we
be happy to
go.
get some people on that
Yeah,
and
we
make
could
a
get
nice
Tim a little
birding
hut
hut
up as
there.
your land manager.
Yeah, it'd be perfect.
I'll go out there and spread like, wildflower on the upland parts and smartweed in the edges, and we'll get some good migrants and
How do you feel about living in a tent?
a tent?
Yeah, you could
I'm
live in
too
a
old
tent
for
on the
tents
property.
anymore.
What about a yurt?
A yurt?
Yurt would be cool.
I camp out of my car now. I built this platform in my car. It has like a fold-out mattress. And I can, just me, myself, and I in the back of that thing. It's pretty comfy, and there's no worry about rain or storms or anything like that. So just give me a spot to park my car, and
Easy, even easier than having to make a yurt.
I'll be good. Yeah, you don't need to build a yurt.
Yeah. Tim, have you ever had any sketchy experiences while you're out birding?
Like scary or just weird or
Really any of the above, like anytime you felt like you might die or like you were lost in the woods and you might not make it back or anything kind of like that.
oh gosh. Yeah, so I did a shorebird or not shorebird, marsh bird survey at El Dorado Marsh, northwest of Fond du Lac, 2012. I remember the year, and I'll tell you why. So I did a Tom Presby. He's coming up several times. He got me in trouble on this one. So he's like 6'5", long legs. He can do these walks out into the marsh, and he just could do this one this year. So I inherited the survey from him. And it's where you go out before dark and you play tapes and you see what kind of marsh birds you get to respond. And if you look at the map, most of the spots are accessible, but there's a few that kind of go out into the marsh a little bit. And it's a sedge marsh, which is like these clumps, and then in between the clumps is mud. And then it's you're either walking on the clumps or in the mud, and the clumps weren't very big, and I didn't have good balance, so I was stuck walking in the mud, and my legs are a lot shorter than Tom's, and so I was like having trouble getting out there, and I was not well hydrated, and by the time I got out there, I had the worst leg cramps of all time. And I
Oh
could not bend my legs, or they would just start cramping again. And so I'm a kilometer plus, maybe two out into this marsh, and I'm sweating, I'm getting bit up, and I can't move my legs, and I'm like, I might die out here. But I made it back. And then that day, I mean, it took me a lot longer than it should have to be out there. I was definitely concerned, we'll put it that way. Not for my life, but I was concerned. But anyhow, that next like couple hours after that was my buddy's wedding rehearsal dinner, where I had to help him carry kegs of beer to the dinner, and so I did not get a downtime after that one.
Yeah, you got to be careful with those marshes. I fell in a marsh once where it seemed solid and then you just fall in the water, probably like waist deep. And it was cold, wasn't expecting it. It can, and if you lose a phone in there, good luck. You're never finding that thing unless the ringer's on.
Exactly what I was going to say was that survey you had to do three times throughout the spring. The first time I went in and you hit a soft spot, and I went in, I was wearing hip waders, and my whole everything went in. It went, water down your hip waders.
That's
My
an
phone
awful
got
feeling.
soaked. I had to quit that survey because my phone was had the MP3s with the audios on there, and I was dead. It was just dead. So, you read my mind on that one.
Yeah.
I think you guys both had the same experience almost at one point or
Funny
another.
how it goes. Like, maybe everybody has that experience at some point when they're doing bird surveys.
Yeah, right. Clearly, you haven't spent enough time in the marshes.
I am okay with that. I'm going to be on the periphery of the marsh or whatever trails they have there. I don't feel a need to go waist deep in it. Maybe that's just me.
Well, some of us have fun experiences to talk about and some of us don't. So.
Yeah, talking about, I got bit up, my legs were cramping. I like how too it went from this dire, I thought I was gonna die, and then you're just like, and I made it back. What happened in between? How did you do it? Did some
Well, I couldn't lift my legs very much because, like I said, I couldn't even bend my knees without it cramping. And so I'm like, it took me forever to get back to the car. And I was like, so far off the road, I'm like, this is probably like the first human most of these mosquitoes have, or mammal, or these mosquitoes have ever seen. And I was walking through the woods, and it was even like laid out on the map, like, get back to your car this way because it's easy. But a tree this big, you still have to lift your leg over. So I was like, penguin walking, trying to get my leg over these trees
doing a little
because
waddle action.
I couldn't bend my legs without them just severely cramping. But I eventually got to like where I could see the road, and I could see my car, but I still had another 50 yards of just absolutely wet cattail marsh. And so I had to get like hip down into the water again after I had been walking on upland. And then I was like, oh no, this is where I die. But it took me forever. And I think I drank about a gallon of water in the car when I finally did get back.
I don't think I've had any
So
experiences where I've almost died.
stay hydrated.
We've had some sketchy experiences for sure.
Like what?
So we were driving, we were coming back from a trip down south that we had driven there, and we were making our way back up, and we were
Oh,
going
I
to
know what you're
stop at
talking
this
about.
one place, and we were getting into this really remote area where it's just like a couple fields, not a lot going on. We had really spotty cell phone service, and then like the road dipped down, and we thought that like our car was going to get stuck.
No, it did get stuck.
But we got it, we got it free. We thought it was going to be
Yeah.
stuck permanently. But it's crazy how your mind switches so quickly to, like, oh, it'd be cool to see this bird. Like, I hope we don't die. Like, I hope we don't get
Yeah, you're
stranded.
like
You're like,
absolute survival
your
mode.
priorities kick in. You're like, I don't need to see that today. It's
No.
fine. Let's just
Well, the
get
situation that
out of the
you're talking
situation.
about, it was there were supposedly red-cockaded woodpeckers in this area, and one of our friends had even eberded them at some point. I think that was down in Arkansas. So it's some national forest in Arkansas, but we're driving down this road. We see a couple farmhouses where the people are looking at us like we're nuts for even being there. It was one of those situations you feel very unwelcome by the locals, and you're driving down, and we hit this stretch where I think there was like some trees over the road, and there was also some water going across the road. And we looked at it, and I
Oh,
had,
that's bad news.
yeah, it was bad news. I did not have anything with four-wheel drive either. And we just decided, okay, we probably are going to have to abandon this mission. And so I started to turn around, and the car just all of a sudden the tires are spinning, and everything goes
Oh,
through my
no.
mind. You know, we're gonna have to talk to these people up there for help. They're probably gonna try to murder us or rob us or something. And fortunately, we got it out somehow. I think I did the little maneuver where you inch back forward and then gun it back. You know, get over that
Yeah.
hump that you're stuck on. So we got out of it, but that could have been a very different
And you
situation.
never know, maybe the locals were nice, but it's just like a thing where you don't want to have to deal with it, and your mind goes through
Yeah.
all the scenarios of if it does happen, like how are you going to get out of it?
Well, there's
Right.
sometimes too where you'll go to someplace remote where you lose cell service and you just realize even if you had a problem with your car, what would you do? You would have
Yeah,
to be
you're
walking for a
toast.
long time to try to get out of it, or maybe your phone's dead, you know, when you're out there or something. And
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, that's what our previous generations had to deal with, you know,
Everywhere.
if they want to go burning, but they also planned better than we do, you know. They didn't have GPS, they didn't have 911 on a, you know, a little handheld thing, so they probably had a better idea of what they should do. You know, we just leave the house, we go to Quick Trip for our coffee, and then we go burning. We don't do any planning.
Anytime we mention Quick Trip, please sponsor us. You're seeing this.
Yeah,
But can you imagine how much crazy stuff probably got reported when there were like no cameras? Like, yeah, I saw a field fair in Waukesha County. Like, sure you did, Jim. Whatever.
Here's my sketch of it
Yeah.
eliminated.
Yeah, I mean, even pre-eBird, you know, that stuff, yeah, there was no filter. I mean, you had to wait for like a records committee to say, you know, good, yeah, right. But yeah, I agree. Like when I started reviewing, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff that comes through that, like, you're just like, this guy, like, he keeps reporting this stuff and there's no way he's seeing it. And I don't know, it is crazy what people will come up with.
Are you the reviewer for Waukesha, Tim? We can
Yeah,
send you
there's a
some
couple of
crazy
us.
stuff if you just want some laughs.
If you want some stories, you know.
Don't worry, I got plenty of that. I laugh at that stuff all the time. You might know some of the people I laugh
I
at.
might.
We won't
Just
get there.
kidding, just kidding.
kidding. But not really.
Not really.
Well, cool, Tim. We're excited to follow your county big year as you progress. I think your goal, even more so than just getting a high total for the county, should be to go for the life county list, be number
Yeah.
one eventually.
Yeah, so I can get 282 or whatever that is.
Yeah.
Well, you
But
need
yeah, well, I mean,
284.
Pat Horn's still kicking and he's semi-retired. So he, you know,
He's
once
gonna
I
come
start
back
catching him,
and steal it from
he's gonna
you.
come back. Yeah.
That's what we
Yeah,
need, a
he's gonna.
nice rivalry.
Yeah, we need that
Well, and
neck and neck
he's a.
sort of, you know, up and down, back and forth sort of deal going on. You gotta
Yeah,
do
and
your part and catch up.
he's one of those jokesters too. You know, he'll pull your leg a lot and then he also doesn't really care whether you think he saw it or not. He's like, it's my list. So, you know, so.
Yeah, you need
Yeah,
282. 282 to top him.
282. Yeah, we'll see how much stuff comes through. You know, I certainly have the benefit of eBird to notify me of that stuff, but yeah, usually it just takes getting out there and seeing that stuff. So I don't want to have to rely on our buddies Spence and Mike to find everything.
Tim, I got some bad news though. You're eighth on the list of completed checklists for Waukesha County. You're at
Oh, I have a full-time job,
1,799.
dude.
The
You gotta stop
top
using that
one
as an excuse. Jack Black did it.
is Andrea with 5,213. You're like
Yeah,
some 3,000 checklists behind.
I don't think she likes sleep. That's my opinion. I
You
think
gotta
she
start
this is.
submitting 20 checklists a day.
Yeah, and you could do
Yeah, well, I do
it.
have a goal of reaching I thought it was a decent goal of reaching, was it 2,000 checklists in the county by the end of the year. But that's like one, it's like three, I needed like 300 or something like that. So I got a lot of work to do. But I figure if I do that, I'll have put myself out there enough that I'll see a lot of birds. So
I have an idea for you. Wake up in the morning, look out your window, submit a checklist. When you get home from work, look out your window, submit a checklist. Before you go to bed, walk outside, listen for any nocturnal species, submit a checklist. Then you're getting, you know, over
yeah.
900 checklists a year.
Yeah, well, right. I know how to do math, but like,
You know, that's what I'm wondering though. Seems like
I
there's a
every
pretty easy way
checklist
to
is
victory.
worthwhile. I realized every checklist is worthwhile. I just, it's only so fulfilling after, you know, when you say keep reporting the same red wing, blackbird, and mallard off the patio every day.
Hey, I have a hot take for you. Do you think that people should put zeros more in checklists when a species that's usually there is absent or a rare bird is absent?
That's not how you should be using the system. I'm pretty sure that's how what they tell you is like the lack of the bird being there is sufficient enough that you don't need to put the zero there.
I usually put it in the notes if it's something that that just the checklist notes.
Do
If it was
people
something
actually do that? They put a zero? Does it show up as like them seeing the species then because it has a number, or does it
I
not
don't
show up?
know.
I don't
I'm
know
not
either.
sure. I haven't.
Right, submit a checklist
look
real
at
quick.
Gonna say we should test it out. I'm gonna
Yeah,
report a
test it out
field
a little
pair
bit.
in Waukesha with a
Zero
zero.
field fare.
I should know this. I've given presentations on eBird before, so you know, I should know this, but I don't really remember what it looks like.
So what are some of the things being eBird reviewer that irk you the most that people do?
Is it X's?
No, X's actually don't come through review. Those get invalidated pretty quickly. Especially if it's a checklist full of X's, that's automatically system invalidated as
So
like
you're not advising people
list
to do
builder.
that? It's not very useful.
X's are almost not useful at all. Yeah, I mean it's a presence absence thing, which is fine to know, but estimating even just a really rough estimate is the best, the least you should do. I mean, it's good to know whether it's, you know, 10 versus 100 greater white-fronted geese, you know, whereas if you put the X down there, it could be one or it could be 10,000. You never know.
Yeah.
So, and if you're like putting in like, oh, well, I saw 1,000 blackbirds, but I couldn't identify all of them. Well, put, you know, what you could identify. And then, you know, if you identified 50 red wings, 50 brown-headed cowbirds, and then 950 other blackbirds that you just didn't identify, we'll put that in as 950 blackbirds.
I think we may have to have you back on to talk all about the best practices for eBird. And I'm not even kidding about that, because I feel like, yeah. Oh, you know what
it
bothers
is a
me the
little
most?
bit like of a passion, I guess. Well, there's a lot of pet peeves that go into it as a reviewer, you know. One of them is just not giving very good descriptive information. You know, like, oh, it was in the tree. Well, no kidding. It was a warbler. It's going to be in a tree kind of thing. You know, there's the obvious misuse of Merlin and not using corroborating evidence there. Or some others, like
You know what bothers
continuing
me the
when
most? Yeah,
there's
I was
no
just about to say
previous.
continuing, because at least
Yeah,
give me some
continuing is
information.
fine for a bird that's been there, but if it's not been there for a week, you should probably, you know, say what you saw.
Well, I think even
So.
if it is, you know, continuing daily or something, just say where it was in the area. Because, you know, sometimes there'll be something like Horicon Marsh continuing, and that
Yeah.
doesn't tell you anything about where it is.
Yeah, continuing is really useful only when you have, like, you know, there's a guy in, what town is that? Probably near Montrose, Merton area. He has a red-shouldered hawk nesting in his yard. And so he reports it 2-3 times a week. And he just put, you know, continuing on a nest or something like that. So that's fine for that. But like, you know, if there's like kind of like a known bird, like a chat, yellow-breasted chat at Scuppernong Prairie, you know, somebody goes out there every weekend, gets their chat for the year kind of thing and says continuing. It's like, well, chats are weird. They're cryptic. They make funny noises. But there's also, you know, white-eyed vireo is a potential bird out there that has a similar weird sound. So let's maybe describe what we heard, or
Yeah,
record it. Get some
I've lately,
recording.
just to try not to be hypocritical and trying to be helpful, I'll put a lot of detail about for any rare bird about where it was seen, what it was doing, any observations of it that would be
Yeah.
unique or helpful. Or even
Yep.
like advice or directions for people that want to see it. So when we were in South Texas, I did that a lot because we would find
Yep.
stuff would be difficult because we would assume it was easy and it wasn't. So I would put, you know, best to see it between these times in the day because it
Yeah.
tends to not be seen after, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that too. Like, there's times where maybe that isn't the best idea. Like, if it's a bird that's like really susceptible to being flushed.
Oh, for
But,
sure.
But like if it's like especially in migration, the birds are moving through. If it's only there for a couple of days, you know, if there's like yellow-throated warbler or something, and people want to go see the yellow-throated warbler, you know, tell them what, oh, it's in the sycamore tree in the corner of 92nd and Rawson or something like that.
Yep.
You know, that's nothing but helpful there.
Tim, I think you need one of these Let's Chat mugs.
I
Just saying.
got so many coffee mugs. Let me see. Yeah, this one.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's the Atlas one that we did. What I should I was gonna say just did, but it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, time's
Was that
relative, though.
was that one of the mugs on your guys's site?
Yeah, that was
Yeah.
something we had designed.
That's cool.
Yeah,
Did
it
you
turned out
guys
well.
do the art for that?
One of Ryan's friends did, actually.
Cool.
But a lot of the stuff I've made on the site, but this was one that she did for us. Yeah, it turned out really
That's
well.
awesome. Yeah,
Oh.
that looks really close, like a really accurate chat. That's
Yeah, she
awesome.
did a really good job. I was very impressed. Now Derek has
Yeah,
all our
there's always
respect.
room for one more coffee mug, you know?
Oh,
There's
yeah.
always room.
Well, cool, Tim. Anything else about Wisconsin or your kind of big year before we sign off here?
I guess I don't really have anything special to say about big years. Only take it on if you are going to follow through, though, because if you end up on a podcast and then you don't follow through, then people are going to start asking questions. So you
That's
better
true.
be
Yeah. It's more on the line
ready.
now for you.
Yep, you're
I
locked in.
have to. I have to.
A year
I
is a long
absolutely have
time, Tim.
We need to have you back
to.
on
It
at the end of the
is.
year to either talk about your great success or your horrific failure.
Yeah. Hopefully it's the former, but I'm sure there'll be things that, you know, you miss, like Hudsonian Godwit. Jack says, oh yeah, it's right down there, and then you get there and it's gone. So stuff like that.
You'll
Or
have to
maybe you'll just be
send.
like, I got stuck in a marsh again.
Yeah, you'll have to send us your needs list for Waukesha so we can be on the lookout for random things you need.
Help us help
Yeah,
you.
I mean, that's the more people are e-birding, the more it helps everybody else, you know? Like if you guys are e-birding and you don't report that yellow, or if you're not e-birding and you don't report the yellow rail, you know, that you find, nobody else knows where to look. So
My yellow rail.
what?
That says my yellow rail. You don't need to know about it.
Well, there is that too. I do not want to impose on anybody because what you see are your birds, and there is no obligation for you to do anything else but see them. So whatever you see and want to do with it is fine by me. But if you want to throw it an eBird, I'd be appreciative too.
I'm sold. I'll give you the yellow rail location.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks so
And
much for
I will
joining
too,
us,
is with
Tim.
you. Yeah, it's fun. I like what you guys are doing. I wish you the best and keep up the good work.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much. And thanks to everyone for watching this episode of the Badgerland Birding Podcast.